Welcome to the Blacklist AfterBuzz After Show, Episode 3. Spagnus is still missing, Mr. Kaplan's alive, and Mark Zuckerberg's a blacklister. Let's go.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yeah. Good see. Baby, come back. Welcome to the Blacklist AfterBuzz After Show, Episode 3 of Season 4. We chose Player, Baby Come Back.
Because how could you not?
For poor Spagnus.
Spagnus, out in the world.
Out in the wilderness. Spagnus of God is missing in action.
Spy Baby Agnes. Thank you for joining us here once again in the Blacklist AfterBuzz After Show. I'm Joe Braswell, and I'm joined by the lovely Julia Carely.
That's me. Hello.
And for the second week in a row, it's a goddamn miracle. I'm joined by Joe Sanfilippo.
Straight up loaves and fishes status right now, people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's right.
Wow.
Straight up loaves and fishes.
Loaves and fishes.
Are you calling yourself Jesus?
No, I'm saying
You called yourself Jesus.
Somebody pour some water on the floor. I'm going to show you all three.
Please, I would love some wine. I would love some wine, yeah. Mr. Italian Jesus.
Can you do something with this, please? Some mug of water? I'm thirsty.
I'll wave my hands, but I think you're going to be disappointed.
That's a nice demeanor. Right? That'd be nice.
We are here. Sorry we are running a little late for those of us who are joining us live in the chat room. Thank you for all of you. I'll go Ginny D and... Oh, it's me. I'm sorry.
Oh.
There it is. That was a little feedback. Yeah. Watson and Ginny and Michaela and Anasolabalosaha.
I think that's how you pronounce it. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds really real.
Thank you for joining us, all of you. We're going to talk about this episode, which was a great one. I actually liked this episode. We'll talk about what happened and why. We got Mr. Kaplan seems to be alive. As we mentioned, Spagnus is poor spy baby Agnes is still missing. Alexander Kirk Rostov Constantine is still at large. And we had some really tricky kind of relationships between Liz and the post office, and Liz and Red, and Red and the post office, and we'll see how that plays out. Also, a little later on the show, we will bring in our good friend Jody Walker from Entertainment Weekly to get her takes on the episode as well. If you didn't check out her column, you should check it out. It's good. She made some great analogies between this and Shark Tank, which I'll ask her about as well. But in the meantime, I want to ask you guys what you thought about this episode. I just wanted to say, for me, I'm overall pleased. I've been kind of mentioning this the last couple of episodes, but I'm very pleased with what John Bokenkamp and the gang have done to sort of like bring this whole Blacklist mess kind of back home. What they've done is they successfully brought back the procedural, which I think this was pretty much a close-ended Blacklister, and it wasn't too corny, and I felt like it felt like there was a one-off crime to solve. They solved it, and it felt pretty good. It also led to all the other things in the overarching serialized Blacklist. I think they're doing a good job with that. I also think they did a really good job of solving the baby problem, the fact that Liz Keene and also Megan Boone were pregnant. I was wondered, like, what's going to happen with this baby? Is a baby going to be bumping around? Is she going to be fighting crime with a baby? Blacklist baby? But I think, as I predicted, I'm sort of big upping myself, as I predicted.
One must.
The baby is gone. The baby it seems to be the focus of season four, and they're chasing the baby around, which makes sense. I also like the writing in this episode. I think the detail was great. Like Red's watch, the fact that he, you know, had his watch retrieved by my man is funny. The detail in his 1972 story, watching Mike Douglas. I just thought there's some really nice touches. We got some character work with Navabi and also with a little bit of Wrestler and of course some Aram, which we like, which we'll talk about later. But all in all, a good, satisfying episode. I would like to know what you think, Julia Carely.
I enjoyed this episode. It felt like kind of like an old school Blacklist episode to me, I have to say. You know, we had a very specific Blacklister who had a very specific purpose. We all went on a big hunt for him and big fat crimes were happening. I mean, it was fun. I didn't feel like too much was really moved forward in the overarching story.
Right.
I would like to know where Spagnus is, I would like to see Zombie Kaplan and what's happening to her.
Sure.
I love me some Mr. Zombie Kaplan, though.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, all in all, we employed some new devices this week with Lizzie and her mom, which was kind of interesting. I'm not sure if I completely, I mean, I get it, but I don't know if I completely understand it. It seemed a little bit off
the whole,
book,
the
off
whole
color.
Touching.
Yeah. Mom. Yeah. I mean, the woman who plays Katarina, whose name I cannot remember, she was soulful and fantastic in those scenes. But I don't know. It felt a little off color as far as what we do with the blacklist.
This is our second Katarina hallucination, isn't it?
Third. Well, if you count the Cape May.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Cape May. That was long. That was a long standing.
But he was also in like this the pits of despair and drug use and
all I'm saying is, I mean, she makes a lot of appearances for a dead chick. She comes back and all.
Well, if I were that hot, I'd show up all the time
too. Right? That's totally worth it.
I think so.
Bring the redhead.
And I really like seeing Aram getting some. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Aram!
Big ups to Aram getting some. The cute little blonde.
Her name is Latte Verbeek.
Latte?
Latte.
Lotte.
I think Lottie. That's Lottie.
Okay. I like a nice cup of latte. Lottie? Or latte?
Latte, if you're feeling fancy.
Yeah, I like to pronounce things. I like to pronounce you, never mind.
We're going to go do a sketch now.
I also like seeing Tom D back nice. In action. I love Tom in action. D he's nice. My favorite. Okay, latte.
Hey, Ron.
Latte, it's never mind.
So go, sorry.
No, that was it. Latte.
All right, we're off the rails. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Aram got some. That was great.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. He got some latte.
Thanks for that, Brass.
Well, we're assuming. We never know. Next week they could be like, no, she's just here to massage.
Maybe. I will say,
she dropped the drawers.
Pretty sure she did.
I don't know much about women or how this works or how this thing works.
We're aware.
Like
we are aware.
But Joe or Julia, this is. I mean, that's a pretty bold move to come in from the run.
It's pretty strong.
Like, oh, you got dinner on.
Wang.
What should I do? Aram's like. I mean, I don't know. Is that the move, Julia?
Yes.
Okay.
There it is. Done and done.
Okay.
Have you boys never seen that move?
No.
That's unfortunate for you both.
That is unfortunate. I'm going to make some calls. This is bullshit.
I need to get my marinara sauce game up.
I'm just going to start cooking sauce.
I need to be cooking some sauce.
Every time my wife comes home, I'll be like, pants are still
like,
on,
I got
honey.
The sauce, honey.
The sauce, guys.
You know, see, I'm making the sauce. I put on the apron, everything.
I like my marinara game. This
why are your pants on, honey? I don't understand.
Right. So, well, good for Aram. So let's get into this a little bit. So the blacklister of the week was one
Miles McGrath.
Mr. Miles McGrath, not related to
Mark McGrath.
Mark McGrath of Sugar Ray.
Which is what I catch on every time.
Someday. That's my bad Mark McGrath imitation.
Oh, that is really bad.
Yeah, it is.
that's like the worst imitation ever. What is that?
That's what he does. In the videos someday.
All right, let's just keep moving. This is freaking me out.
That's Mark McGrath,
is it?
Yeah, well, no, maybe not. Anyway, I'll show you the video.
I'm gonna look, but let's move on.
Mark McGrath is Miles McGrath is our blacklister, who is, I mean, I like the idea. I think this idea really works well on paper as a conceit for me, which is this sort of like, you know, snarky, super smart Silicon Valley billionaire type who we all sort of grown to know as a stereotype, as a kind of know-it-all Silicon Valley type. But actually, in the actual execution of the guy, he was very sort of not even Zuckerberg esque, more Jesse Eisenberg ish, like in his delivery and his old thing.
They went kind of with a what's the guy's name who had the company where they jacked the price of the drug. I think that's the direction they went with him. It seemed to me that they went in that route.
I felt some strong Jesse Eisenberg Zuckerberg.
That's what I was getting.
Like in terms of his, you know, that kind of a sociopathic kind of, I'm not sociopathic, that's what I'm looking for.
Narcissistic.
No. And yeah, I guess sociopath is the word. Yeah. Sociopathic sort of like element to him. But anyway.
Yeah,
I thought it was fun. I thought it was a neat idea. We've seen all the hard-boiled guys we're going to see, and we'll see more of them, I'm sure. But I like this little departure.
Yeah,
I liked him. It was fun. I like the idea of angel investor for criminals.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like
Aram liked the idea too.
I like, and that was again, well.
He's getting some. He's got jogging just.
Sort of well.
I got nothing. I was going to say something terrible.
Well thought out, well written premise of this guy, of sort of why his backstory of sort of how he, you know, was kicked out for being an asshole and then sued and then used the money to start this sort of supervillain, incubation fund, if you will, like in the style of Silicon Valley. I think that was all very clever as well. So we first see what happened.
We're passing notes
in school. Class.
I can't share it with everyone. Me? Absolutely not.
Is there something in my face?
No, you're good.
All right. We did see the. I'm sorry. The show opens with the sort of a Joe Carnahan-esque action sequence.
Absolute caper.
Which is very cool.
Yes.
Total caper.
To see. And then we go back and we see the sort of separation between Red and. Not only the post office, but Liz and Tom as well. Like, Red sort of feels like he's this loner who really can't trust anyone, whose goal is still to bring in poor spy baby Agnes, but not, presumably not with the help of the FBI or Liz, right? And so he does have that meeting with her at her grave.
Which is a nice little dig there.
Nice dig. And to sort of say, I'm on the case, but you stay out of it. And what did you think of that whole sequence and how Liz reacted to that?
You know, I was a little confused by it. I mean, I liked the dig. I liked bringing her to the gravesite because he's hurt. Everyone is hurt. And, they did a really good job of showing people being hurt and explaining that and sort of working through those feelings, I thought, with Aram, with Samar, with Red as well. But he, you know, they had that, that conversation back and forth and, you know, she's like, if you know where my baby is, you have to tell me. And he point blank says, no, I don't. Because she mucks everything up. But then he goes and gives her information anyway, which I thought was a little counterintuitive. Because knowing her, she always goes rogue. She always goes off on her own and doesn't, I don't have to listen to anyone. I'm going to do it myself. And off she goes. And she goes off and does it herself.
Pretty solid.
Yeah.
I don't have to listen to anyone.
It's almost like, is she Southern?
Spoiled brat of a character.
Do you really want, no, you don't want to see my impression.
I'm Lizzie King! Oh no, what's that? Those are her eyes? Her eyes lit up with lights?
You know what? I've said this before, they write her into these corners, and then they're like, well, nobody likes her, it's so fucking weird. Like, so they did this thing, again, this episode, where they want her walking around, like, oh, Samir's going to take a while for Samir, because she's still, oh, she hates me. And then Aram says, yeah, she needs some time. We all do. We all do. What do you mean? You haven't forgiven me yet? It's been 2 days.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an entitled... It's like, I'm fucking Lizzie Keene. Do you know who I am?
And that made me feel bad for Aram, too. Like, she thought, well, it's Aram. It's a puppy dog. He's going to love me no matter what.
He's in. I do whatever I want. Take a shit on his laptop. Yeah. He's cool with it.
He's going to love me.
Who shit on my laptop? It was me.
Where are you?
Where
are you going?
For all this frustration with her, that's with her actions.
That's
let's go ahead.
For all this disparaging of her actions, I felt like she was a little bit redeemed. She got a little cool when she was, you know, in FBI headquarters.
That was a cool caper.
That was cool. And I love seeing she and Tom working together.
That was
fun. And I was like, okay, maybe I like you. Maybe today I like you a little bit.
Yes.
You know, the scene that they had at the gravesite grated on my nerves. I think I sent you guys a text, a rather terse text.
Indeed.
But because it felt like season one or season two again. It felt like, you're telling me things I don't want to. It just felt like that same dynamic
I would love to say this. I think that the three of us and anyone else out there in the world has to sort of come to the fact that I think this is the dynamic. This is the Red Lizzie dynamic. Yes. This is what it's going to be.
I'll go with the lead.
It is the father-daughter dynamic, father-daughter-esque-ish or light dynamic. It is the sort of, bratty, impetuous, sort of, young daughter and the father, protective father. Like, that's kind of what the dynamic is. So Lizzie's always going to be this sort of, like, you know, arms crossed or hands on her hips.
That was Kane.
Very harumphing. And yes, exactly. Yeah. She's
I'll
always
meet you.
Yes.
I don't need anybody. What am I doing?
I love it.
Can I stop this?
Keep ripping.
No. I do it forever.
Everyone, look.
It brings me such joy.
you broke me.
The folks in the chat room say you sound just like her.
Thanks, guys.
Yes.
I've been honing this for a long time.
You're exactly right. No, but I do think that this is actually the dynamic here. So we should get used to it, Jeff Lippo, because at this point, I'm personally done being like, ugh. I'm like, okay, well, this is what she does. This is what they do, right?
This is how I'm dealing with now, right, with my bad impression. Okay. That's how I'm going
to
get through
you this. Act out in whatever way you need to deal with it. It's fine. I think the thing that does bother me so much is that the idea, the notion that Red is going to give, and it made me wonder if this was intentional. Red sort of gives Lizzie just enough information, because the next scene, she's back at the post office. Here's what he's doing. And they're like, and she's like, got just enough information from Red to go back and tell the post office, who of course is not going to stand down. Red sort of says the line, it's written. What are we all supposed to just sit here while Red goes off and does it by himself? Yeah, I think so, because Red knows what he's doing, and you guys just F things up. Which they did, by the way.
Yeah, they did.
Which they went out and did their thing and screwed things up.
Got people killed.
I wonder. Yeah, killed. Got people killed.
Killed.
So I don't know. That's the piece for me where it's like, you know, why does Red keep doing this? Sometimes he uses them. He knows they're going to do that. Sometimes he doesn't. But you know, I'm okay with the overall thing. What I did like in this episode, I want to talk about, is we finally got to see. Well, not finally. I think we saw it before, but we got to see some Tom and Lizzie. You know, the little Mr. and Mrs. Smith action.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
On a caper. Doing some spy shit.
Doing some caper business.
What'd you think of that, Joe?
I like that.
You had to like that one.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I had a good time with that. I thought that was fun. I thought Tom was fun. I thought Lizzie was actually enjoyable. Yeah. I thought the whole thing was great.
Well, that's what we've always liked, Lizzie. You know, she has this past of being, you know, I don't know what you call it.
Give her some edge, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Little criminal aspects and swipe and stuff.
Yeah.
And I love that.
And I did, and it was kind of like felt like a little bit of a FU to maybe us in the panel when she does that sort of fake, like, you know, cry, sort of Lizzie Keene, pouty, whiny, I'm Lizzie Keene thing. And we're like, here we go again. And she's like, I'm really acting. I'm going to steal the card. I'm like, oh, Lizzie.
Yeah, I liked it.
That was cool.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
F you, Flippo.
I really doubt very seriously if it was directed at us.
It was. I think it was directed at you.
I can't help but feel that is a narcissistic impulse on your part.
Yeah, if you look in the credits,
right,
there's a small print that says F you, Flippo.
But, there's just a little guy there.
Yeah. But I did like that. So they seem to get, you know, enough information. Now, what came out of that was what seems to be a big, not bombshell, but a big piece of information that's going to propel the season and the story forward, which is her mother's diary, right?
Yeah.
Which is a very nice piece written in by John Mogenkamp to help us along here. But in this diary, it would seem to have all the secrets. And by the way, do me a favor, Lizzie. Just finish that bad boy. She's like, I'm halfway through it. I'm just getting to the part where you're a jerk. I'm like, what else? Like, can she finish the thing? Or do we have to wait to the end of the season? You know, episode 13. I'm on page 45. Like, when, get to the end of the diary. I don't know.
I don't know. She read Russian.
Well, there you go.
Well,
welcome to the party. Masha, Masha, Masha.
Masha, Masha, Masha.
Yes. I don't know. Maybe she's on a hot Google Translate. You know, like, she's got the Google Translate up and she's really in there. But yeah, I don't know.
I'm such a fan of that, by the way. I can't tell you how many Google Translate. I use iTranslate, but how many times?
Oh,
it's amazing. What a world we live in.
Love it.
Yeah, what a world. It's very Star Trek or mm-hmm. whatever it is.
It's a beautiful thing.
So I think that's the diary is an interesting device that's going to give us some clues as to what we need to know. So going back, we'll get into the plan and what happened with the plan later. We also get to see, we move back and we get to see our man McGrath and sort of how sinister and cool he is. He's got a little Bond villain in him, that whole little scene with the guy who once he got a lead in the guy and he's talking to Red's man, who I don't remember what the name is.
The Johan guy?
Yeah.
Okay. After he killed Bradley.
Yeah, so he was talking about Bradley.
Had Bradley killed.
His scene about talking about, like, I'm in charge of the strategy.
Everything's calculated.
That was a very cool scene. So what do we think about, I just want to get back to the Aram Navabi situation. I mean, they're really
requesting
sort of
a transfer.
Well, before that, we have a nice little scene where, you know, Aram comes to the conclusion that all faces are asymmetrical
based on
the looking at Navabi's
so cute.
Lovely features.
Oh my God, I love him.
Made me think, like, you know, Aram's game is kind of tight, actually, by the way, Joe. Flippo.
You feel that way?
I don't know. The whole, like, you know, I mean, you can compliment
someone. Well, we had the man come in here as a guest. He came in. He rode a motorcycle here.
Leather jacket.
I mean, rocked the leather jacket.
I wasn't mad at it.
You can compliment the imperfections of a woman's face in a way that is very flattering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong.
Tell me my chin's adorable. I'm all yours.
Yeah. I'm going to guess there's lines. I mean, like, that lazy eye. Look at that. The way it... You got it.
That lazy eye is adorable. The way your nose kind of crooks over to the side is adorable.
I guess there's limits in all things, but I agree with you. It was pretty solid.
I think Aram is proving himself in this episode is quite the, I think he's got some moves under there.
And I think Samar's realizing that she's been missing out.
Yeah, especially after
she's a little too late, Navabi.
Yeah, and so I do want to jump into that, you know, when she's going to put the transfer order in and she's calling, was she calling him to, you know,
I think she
what did she want from him?
She just wanted like that. I think she was kind of up in the air. They said, you know what, I had a good day today. I felt like I was in the cut. I was doing what I was doing with the crew. I felt like we got something done. Maybe I am in the right place, and I'm just mad at this indulgent pain in the ass chick who I've been attached to. I'm gonna call Aram. He's gonna talk me down, and maybe I won't send this thing. And I love the way she plays that because she always plays that character so real. It's like she always makes choices based on real evidence in front of her. She's realistic about people's motivations. She's never playing like a idealist. She's never playing like a, oh gee, I wish, or wouldn't it be great if, or I'm entitled to. She's always like, no, these are the facts, this is what I do, this is what's happening.
And the one time she followed her heart, which is when she was throwing the baby shower and all that, she got her heart broken.
Yeah.
Which is why she's so adamant about leaving, why she's so mad.
And props to Mozan Naro, I think it's Naro, Marno. God, I'm so horrible at names.
God, if it's not John Smith, we are butchering it up in this
movie. We are effing.
Mozan Marno. Props to her for being able to, like, sort of doing so much with so many. Look how much little screen time Navabi has.
And she really creates something really impressive.
She's a fully
realized, I agree with you
100%. Fully realized character. I think we all kind of know and love who she is.
One of my absolute faves.
Very, very little screen time. And we all adore her, right? We all think she's great.
And the way she played that was great, too. Because at the end of it, she wasn't mad at Aram. Mm-hmm. She was like, how dumb are you for getting... Why would you... send. Like, it was just such a...
I've always said she was going to realize what was in front of her the whole time, and I think that was her trying to realize it, and just, you know, hearing what was happening on the other side, that other people have lives that go on outside of this post office.
You know, how did Aram and the jogger meet, you think? I mean, Aram likes the bike, right? He's biking. Coffee shop. She's jogging.
Maybe he stopped for like a little sandwich in the park.
Yeah, I'm thinking laptop in a coffee shop. And she had a problem with her email. Like, oh no! And he's like, let me help you.
And is this a long courtship, or is this kind of like is this a date one or two?
She had a key.
Oh, she had a key.
She unlocked the door and came in herself.
I got to be honest with you. At the beginning of that scene when he had the apron on, I was like, why in the hell are you putting on an apron if it's just you cooking? Oh, hot blonde. Never mind. Put on the apron. That's completely appropriate.
Yeah.
That was perfect.
The apron's part of his shtick, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we never saw him from the waist down. That might have been it. I'm just saying.
Take it easy.
She might have come in after her job without any pants on. He just apron and that's it.
So back to the actual, the blacklist situation. So we find out that they're down a man. Red goes in and has a wonderful meeting with his guy, and the one story he tells is how Johan helped him recover a watch.
The watch,
which I think is,
and then
great.
He had to trade the watch for a used Ruger and what?
I don't remember.
Good,
but it was incredible.
It's great. The idea that he's contracts some elite operative to retrieve a watch is the most Red Reddington thing I've ever heard
Absolutely.
Of in my life. And then going in, then also telling the story about 1972, the last partner he had.
Yes.
I mean, the details of that.
Oh, being,
so good being, with this lawn mowing company.
Yeah, and it's so 70s. Mike Douglas, the bologna sandwich.
Absolutely. Fried bologna sandwich.
Like the sunken living room, everything's like, we get it, it's the 70s, you know? But it's, I thought that was all sort of, those were all nice touches and well written. And again, those are the things that like make Red.
Yeah.
You know, those touches. I think that, you know, I think John Bullcamp actually wrote this episode. And I think, you know, I think these little touches were very throughout, because it felt like we're getting back into the soul of what all these characters are, what the Blacklist is. But, so he then says he has a man for him, does some great Red sort of spy craft and trade craft, and gets Tom in there, and Tom has to go in there and prove himself, And he does, right?
Sure does.
Did you ever doubt Tom?
Not for a damn minute.
No way.
I would never doubt my Tom Keene.
Oh, wait. Yes. Yeah, no Dawson's Creek.
No,
here.
There's no more cardigans in that guy's
life. No sensible sweaters in
that. I love his new haircut, too.
Yeah.
Looking good, Tom.
Yeah, he's got the full spy haircut. No more of the little other thing going on.
No, he's embracing it now.
And they put him in the gym over the last... They're like, you can bulk up, young man. He's getting your own show.
He's moved from the CW over to NBC.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Very, very, very much so. But also, they did a thing which I think is also very much an audience surrogate where they... you know, you're 150 pounds. You're like, you're a little guy.
Pounds soaking wet.
Yeah, how are you going to do this? I'm like, which is what I'm thinking the whole time. I'm like, yeah, super spy, Tom, you're a little guy. But he proved himself, which is awesome.
And I loved that moment. I wanted to hate that moment, but I loved it when Wrestler and Liz are listening and he goes, he's good. And like me, I would have been like, I know. But she's like, oh.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought that up.
I am shot full of Lizzie impressions today.
I don't know. Like,
I'm like clown
that moment,
Lizzie. No, I'm the clown version of Lizzie today.
That's my man.
I'm so glad you brought that up because that moment was really priceless. That was very, 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 very Lizzie Keene. I wonder if that was written in the script. I wonder if that was direction or if that was just Megan Moon doing her thing. But
it was a choice.
It was a choice because it was a camera take. He is good. It's like, that's my man. You know, which is what you would have said. Come on, Julia.
It was just such a funny reaction. I wanted her to be like badass, like, I know. But instead, it was like, ah!
Yeah.
Beaming with pride.
Exactly. Anyway, so he did his thing. Good for Tom. And he fooled everyone.
What am I doing
and
today?
Continues to fool you, Julia.
What's happening to me, guys?
I think we've gotten to this place now. Well, there's no recovery. Like, at this point, if she came out and gave, just the Oscar-winning performances for the rest of the week, we'd be like, whatever.
I'm Lizzie Keene. You're a big hit on the chat room here with the Lizzie impersonations.
Oh, God.
Oh, no. This is great stuff.
This is good stuff.
Moving on. So we have the situation. We have the moving train heist, which is also a cool thing.
Yes.
That's fun.
The idea that this billionaire kid could also build a separate track as well as an entire
warehouse. That no one in 3 weeks?
I mean, he's a billionaire, so he can do whatever he wants.
Do whatever you want.
Yeah. I like that was cool. And it's also full of infectious diseases. Type A, what are they? Type what?
Type A.
Infectious diseases.
Like bad stuff. Like
HIV and...
The Lebowski disease.
Not the Lewinsky.
The Lebowski. Not the Lebowski. And certainly not the Lewinsky.
Although I could go for a white Russian.
Hey, so... the Lewinsky. What
catch me a Lewinsky?
Yes. What's in that? What's in that?
I'm not going to tell you how to get it. But right. I
get
think
it off
the
red dress.
All right.
Blue dress.
All right. Anyway, so the sample number 17, the Rabowski, the Rabinsky,
the big Rabowski,
the Rabowski virus, is sort of seen. This is also kind of out of all the diseases, it's Rabowski, and it's the disease.
So that'll give you leukemia, which means you'll have too many blood cells, which will counteract the disease that they have going in, which is, I don't remember what it's called.
It's simple math. It's just simple math.
Sure. So he'll die of leukemia, but he'll die of leukemia later than he would die of Rostovy, whatever the Rostovy disease is.
If you say so, John Bokenkamp.
That's what it said.
I know. I'm like,
that's what they said.
And that's exactly what it said. I'm just saying. And I'm like, okay, when I'm watching that, I'm going, okay.
But
I love how, you know, again,
I was not a math major. Up to me.
Also, decent writing where, you know, Red has to say it's simple math. And so we're all like disarmed, like, oh, okay, well, shit.
Well, if
it's simple math, then how bad can it be? So he gets that back. We realize that this is the key to being able to, what this is all about, which is really which you predicted. I think you may even predicted, you of all people. Predicted,
why would you say
that
this is scorn?
That this is really about keeping, Alexander Kirkington slash Constantine alive. But he doesn't need Liz to do this because he has baby Agnes to do this, right? Mm-hmm. So, but Red did say one key thing. He thinks that you're his daughter.
Yes.
He thinks you're his daughter. And Red continues to say that. So Red is not, you know, admitting or buying into or seems to know if that Constantine and Masha are directly related.
Can I float an idea here? I'm just going to float an idea.
If it starts with Red and ends in is the father, then I don't want to hear it.
I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. I'm going to float the idea that the writer's room does not know. Okay. And John Bokenkamp has not decided if Red is the dad. Okay. I think season one and season two, no, right. He wasn't the dad. But I think over time, I think they've kind of this place, because they never really backed themselves into a corner far enough that they couldn't back out of it. I think they're in a spot now where they're like, there's enough people online going, if he's not the dad, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So I think enough people have been saying that they might make him the dad anyway.
Yeah.
I think they do know, because there has to be motivation for James Spader to play the way he plays it.
Hold on. They do know, just for the record. James Spader knows, and John Bokenkamp knows. They've been on record saying they know. No one else knows. No one else wants to know. Spader knows the answer. Bokenkamp knows the answer. Maybe a couple other people know the answer.
Amir even told us that when he was here.
Yes, Amir said. So they know the end game for that. You know who doesn't know the answer? You, Flippo.
I'm telling you.
I want to bring in Jody here in a second, but I also want to just mention, of course, the burying the lead here, no pun intended, Mr. Kaplan.
Zombie Kaplan
is crawling around, effed up glasses. The dog comes out. Now, this is, you know, I want to bring in Jody to talk about some of these theories.
That was a big dog.
Well, I mean, look, remember this land was a pristine land.
Yeah.
A bloodhound.
But wait, this was a pristine land that no one is supposed to be, and yet here comes a dog. So this person didn't wander upon Kaplan. This person had to be looking for Kaplan, I imagine.
Am I the only one who is hoping that Red did not really try to kill Kaplan? That there was a plan?
That's my other thing. Red is a cold-blooded assassin. I mean, he's not a bad shot. He doesn't miss. So is this like a teaching her a lesson?
Oh,
is
God.
He, you know, he's doing that.
Is there something else going on?
I had my guy come out and get you. Is it going to be Boz? Is Boz with the dog?
Or is it a setup? Or is like he's like, we've winged Kaplan so that my enemy will grab Kaplan and give Kaplan some info?
Is it an elaborate ruse? Like, you used me, I used you, or something. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
But I want to bring in the lovely Jody Walker from Entertainment Weekly. Jody, are you there?
Hello, friends.
Hi, Jody.
Hi, Jody.
It's lovely.
Hey, everybody. You got my head spinning with all these Kaplan ideas.
I know. Well, I mean, I can't help but do that. And Steve, I don't know. Can you turn her up a little bit, Steve? Because I think she sounds a little low. But so I want to start. We'll go backwards from Kaplan. They sprinkled her in with about maybe three scenes. What did you think of Kaplan sort of popping in? And do you have any theories yourself?
Well, you know, when I was writing my recap last night, I like almost forgot to include her, because it was just these quick little moments of kind of like, you know, catching her bleeding out in the field, and then catching her bleeding out on a rock, and then catching her bleeding out in a river. And then finally she gets found, and it was, you know, it was just like, it was kind of a theme of this season is like, well, did anything actually happen? Like, we actually don't know anything much more than we knew from the previews last week, but I don't have any theories. My head is spinning. I mean, I was very shocked, you know, when I saw that dog come up. I just knew that its owner was going to follow up behind and whip out the cell phone for 911, and then he just, you know, kind of strolled up, checked out the dying elderly woman, and then dragged her off. A little creepy.
Yeah, someone reminded us in the chat room here, Malika, reminded, I'm probably butchering that name too, I'm sorry. But remind me that Mr. Kaplan is married. She had a wedding ring on.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Is this her husband, Mrs. Kaplan?
I don't know. See what I did there?
I don't know who this is, but like, I'm wondering if this is some elaborate plan here. But I want to go back in the episode. What did you think of this episode? I mean, I read your recap. It was very funny. I like all of your sort of Shark Tank comparisons here. But what did you think of this episode?
I liked it. I liked the Blacklister a lot. I mean, I think maybe upon closer inspection of him, it doesn't totally hold water. But the idea of like an angel investor, venture capitalist in crime is like, yeah, like an old school Blacklister that you can really sink your teeth into.
Yeah.
And I loved that. I loved following that. I thought the actor was good and like just, you know, annoying and egotistical enough. I really liked the moment. In a sick way, I liked the moment when his crew's like, oh, we'll only have 12 casualties. And he's like, sweet, you know, just 12 dead folks. It's great. And I always like any time when Red just gets to be really annoyed with Liz. And like, he was real salty this whole episode. And I liked that because I think viewers get annoyed with Liz a lot. And that, like you guys said, that it's kind of just what we have to embrace at this point. That is the relationship. That is the dynamic. She is kind of like this petulant teenager. And you get it. You know, she's had a rough life. She doesn't know who her parents are. Everybody says they're her dad. And then everybody says they're her mom. And then she has all these memories. It's confusing. But yeah, so I thought that the episode played up that dynamic well. And Red kind of like took off the kid gloves and yet still let her know every single thing he was doing.
Are you okay with that dynamic? I mean, I mentioned earlier here in the show that this is kind of what it, I think this is what it is. And I think we're all kind of, some of us are tired of it, Joe, Julia, some of us are. I mean, is this kind of what it is, or do you think that this will evolve into something else? Or are you okay with this sort of like
the Red Lizzie? 66.333% of this panel is tired of it. I don't know if that translates worldwide, but I'm just saying in this room, we're at a 66.3%.
Well, I found a new way of dealing with it.
This is very solid.
But how do you feel about that?
Well, in this room that I'm sitting in, that is my apartment, where I'm alone, I would say that I have kind of embraced it as a give and take, which is to say that Liz is not my favorite female character on television.
What?
She's not my favorite depiction of a strong female. She listens to anything anyone says to her, in what order they say it, and she believes them completely. Like, she's already defending dear old dad in last night's episode. However, Red is one of my favorite characters on television. And if it takes her being kind of weak for him to be really strong, which, you know, it shouldn't. But if it does, it's okay.
That's an interesting point of view.
Hey, Jody, do you want to be my best friend?
Yes!
That's
some grown up business right there.
That's why she writes for Entertainment Weekly. That is exquisitely well articulated by you, and in that we have sort of this battle between one of our favorite characters in television and, let's just say, one of our not favorite characters on television, both at week to week at odds. And the way that the show reconciles that, and the way that we have to reconcile that as viewers, is, you know, I mean, I think the good sort of outweighs the bad in this instance, and I think that we just kind of got to roll with it, Joe.
Y'all deal with it in our own ways.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. What would Lizzie say, Julia?
She wouldn't say anything. She's not listening to you.
Right. That's dumb.
I'm sorry.
Anyway,
I'm not
so
proud.
And so we talked about the blacklister. What was your take? Like, you know, I want to know about what you think about the whole Navabi Aram jogger triangle.
Heartbreaking. You know, she's, and like you guys said, those are two of my, I think both of those actors bring so much to those characters and really like make them almost, I mean, the characters are written well too, but like they just bring so much life to those characters and to that pretty special relationship. You know, it's kind of like, you know, that Aram likes her or did like her, but they've also really embraced a very lovely friendship between two really different people and can appreciate that. And I think in that phone call, he wants to be there for her as much as a friend, and she wants him to be there for her as much as a friend, as it also seems like maybe she's trying to kick something up, you know, talking about how much she doesn't like cooking for one, and here he is apparently cooking for two. So it really, I mean, it both broke my heart in like what could have been and then immediately seemed demolished, but also, you know, good for Aram.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really hope that Aram does some super cool hacker shit and is like, I intercepted that transfer or the request and I want you to stay or something like that. I think that he's going to do something like that.
She better stay. I can't lose her.
She's going to stay.
I know. It is making me pretty nervous. It's like, I love how she's sticking to her guns and being like, hey, Lizzie, remember when you pretended like you were dead and fooled all your friends who were trying to help you?
Totally.
Like, good for her on that. but I also don't want to lose her on the show.
Yeah.
I want to ask
the voice of the people.
I want to ask you about the overarching serialized element of this show, which is the whole Katerina Rostova, Masha Rostova, who's the father, Alexander Kirk, you know, of it all. Now, the Lewinsky disease, Lebowski disease, you know. How is this all landing with you? Are you okay with this in the direction it's going? Is it seem, I mean, simple math? Does that math add up to you? Like, how are you in when this whole sort of, you know, Rostova, who's the father, you know, Kirk thing of it all?
Well, I didn't get into recap writing because I'm a science person, so I can't really testify to the logic of Kirk / Rostov's medical science there.
Sure.
With the, you know, leukemia that he's trying to give himself. And I was not, I mean, I don't think anyone was shocked by the reveal that he has been hunting down Lizzie and Agnes for their blood. And, or, you know, ew, that sounds gross, but that's what he's doing.
Right.
Because he needs them, because he believes, as Red says, he believes that they are his biological descendants. Like, I don't think that that's surprising. However, it is interesting. I'm interested to see where it goes, because Kirk, for a long time now, has really been teetering this character line of he either really could be a father who's coming back into her life, or he really could be malicious and is ready to, like, drain a baby of its blood to save his old man life. And I do think that that's interesting. And there are, like, just a lot, there's revealing a lot of little details that are coming together that more than ever, I think, are encouraging me to make my own theories, which none of them hold water. But for a long time, I've just kind of been along for the ride and interested in what they have to tell me. And now it's kind of like we're getting a lot of puzzle pieces that we can sort of put together in a few ways ourselves. And I think that is building up for what could be a very exciting moment and an exciting reveal, like maybe whatever it may be.
And don't say it. Don't say it, Joe.
I'm just saying, it sounds to me like certain people may be thinking certain thoughts about who the dad might be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're
just
talking
saying.
About.
Just saying.
Okay, can I, though, bring up something from last week?
Yes.
Wish you would.
Last week, one of your viewers / listeners asked me a question, which I very embarrassingly had no answer to, which was, what did I think about the drawing that Lizzie / Masha found in the Summer Palace, mm-hmm. and how it compared to Katerina's drawing that Red found in Katerina's father's house? And my answer was, I have no thoughts, because I did not notice the comparison. But I went back and looked, and I can tell you, and what that viewer could have told you last week, because they're a better watcher than me, that it's the exact same child's drawing.
Huh.
It's the same drawing? Well,
this time, when she finds it in the Summer Palace, it has Masha's name penciled onto it.
Huh.
Wait a minute, so it's the same exact drawing?
The exact same drawing.
Okay, so it's not like it's not like a kid made two separate drawings in the same style. That's the exact same drawing. Wow.
I mean, Liz does bring up with Tom that she and her mother have a lot of similarities, and that they, or she and Tom, I guess, have a lot of similarities, and that they fall in love with the people that they are sworn to spy upon. Mm. But it would be shocking if mother and daughter drew exactly the same when they were 4 years old. Huh. And it's the exact same drawing. The only difference is that when Red finds it, it's Katerina's drawing. It doesn't have a name on it that I could see. And when Masha finds it, to be believed as her own drawing, it does have a name on it.
Interesting.
Which has really sent my head spinning about what exactly. And you may have noticed that we got our second or third comment about how children's memories are to be trusted in last night's episode.
And it's also...
That's something to keep an eye on.
I agree. We have to wrap soon, but I kind of want to get to predictions right now. But I do want to ask... mentioned that, you know, it's known that somehow there's been some memory tampering here going on with Lizzie. So, I mean, what she believes to be true, what is actually true, are probably not the same thing. So there's still a lot of a lot of secrets to be unearthed and answers to be found, I imagine, of course, in the Blacklist. I want to get into, let's do predictions and get out of here because I have some questions, specific
Your
questions.
AfterBuzz TV predictions.
For predictions, I want to, that was a nice quick drop. For predictions, I would ask some very specific questions. For all the first question is, what do we think is going on with Mr. Kaplan? Joe, quick.
I'm hoping, this is a hope more than a think, I'm hoping because it. I don't want Red to be the kind of guy that would whack Kaplan. And now that Bokenkamp has made like so much out of her dragging herself. I mean, it's one thing if we could walk away from like bang and then we never see her again, but the dragging and the blood and the glasses and there's a nice old lady dragging herself through the woods. That is really, really hard for me to take. So I am desperately hoping that we're going to find out that this was all a setup. That she's going to be on somebody else's team.
Julia?
I don't know. That's a pretty painful, awful setup.
Well, yeah, but I know. But still, at this point, it changes my perception of Red so dramatically. I don't want it to.
Maybe she won't remember. Maybe she has amnesia.
Ooh,
when she comes to.
Dr. Kaplan. Mr. Kaplan, amnesia.
Oh, that's such a 1985.
Isn't it? It's good.
How do I write for a guy who doesn't have a head?
Does she have an evil twin, too?
Maybe. Here's hoping.
What do you think, Jody?
I have a really hard time reasoning out with logic what Red's benefit could have been to shoot her in a fairly terrible way without meaning to kill her. And I have always believed that Red is a fallible person. So I'm gonna stick with for now that he did mean to kill her and that someone else is saving her. But I have a very ominous feeling about where she is being dragged to right now. But my hopeful prediction is that whoever is saving her and wherever she's being dragged to is going to reveal a lot about her past and her history that we don't know yet.
Ooh. Okay, and very, very quickly, this has to be like a 10-second or 15-second answer, but how's Tom going to get off the show? Tom's got to spin off.
Maybe Tom and Kaplan are spinning off together. Maybe that's part of what's happening with Kaplan. Mm. I don't know. Maybe Kaplan's part of the spinoff.
Okay.
Mm. I like that. Oh, I like that prediction.
Right.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I think maybe he, I don't know. I'll stick with that. I haven't really thought about that. I've been really like deep in world of who's her dad.
Jody, have you any thoughts on how Tom's going to get over to Blacklist Colon Redemption?
Colon Redemption makes it sound like a cereal.
My only thought is perhaps this baby stays lost forever and Tom's like mission becomes finding that baby.
That's what I'm assuming.
And just takes him off the show.
Okay. And then Lizzie's just kicking in the Blacklist. Hammering down blacklisters while Tom's out fighting.
Well, that
Lizzie is just like trying desperately to communicate with her dead mother, and
got it.
Sure is.
Okay.
Well, you know, not for anything. Did you guys feel like there was a scene missing where Lizzie was like crying about the baby that just wasn't in the episode? I mean, like the baby is not there. But she was like, "Let's go do some stuff."
Well, the assumption is there's been some.
I know. I just feel like
outbursts.
I just feel like that scene was missing. I feel like that in order to make her more palatable. You need to have her like being like, you know, a little devastated that the kid is still MIA.
We're gonna get out of here, but we have to mention it. And there's one huge plot point that we did not mention at all, which is the fact that it turns out that Red was put with. Or no, that I'm
Katarina
sorry, Katarina was
put with Red
as an assignment.
What?
Much like Tom was put with Masha.
Flippy floppy,
Lizzie.
Flippy floppy.
Flippy floppy. That's your theme song.
Flippy floppy, flippy floppy.
All right.
No, probably not. We'll drop that.
I don't know what that
means. It'd be a one-off right there.
Flippy Floppy, J-Dub. I don't know. What's your nickname, Red? Red!
Oh, Red!
Oh,
right. Done.
It's a little blonde right now. And going back.
All right. I think that's all we got for this week. Jody, thank you for joining us again. And hope to see you, hear from you as much as we can in the future. Where can the kids find you on Twitter? And then tell us about where can they read you?
The kids can find me at the Jody Walker on Twitter. J-O-D-I is how you spell Jody. And you can just find me on the internet writing about TV a lot, for EW and other places.
Awesome. And Joe, where can the folks find you?
The Twitter's at Joe Flippo, JoeFlippo. And, website is josephsanfilippo.com.
Uh-huh. Good.
Yeah.
And for you?
My turn. Twitter and Instagram and apparently just Snapchat, even though I have no idea how to use it still. Yeah. One day I'll figure it out.
Someday.
With my name, Julia Carely, JuliaCarely.
Yep, you can find me on Snapchat at not at anything, JK Braz on Snapchat and on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Is that right? Yeah. At Joe K. Braswell on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for joining us on listening to us live. All of you guys who are watching us live, thanks for watching and commenting on YouTube. Thanks for commenting and watching on listening on iTunes as well. We appreciate all your comments. Thank you, Jody, again for joining us. For everyone here, we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.